We missing anybody? Like we'd know, right? All right, so my name's Rob Ford. I'll be the facilitator tonight like I typically am at most of these, I guess. Seen many of you for the last 6-7 years, and it's my pleasure as always. Thanks for taking the time to come out here tonight. I know it's a long drive for many of you. Some of you have come for 3 to 5 hours away from here. And so we appreciate you making that sacrifice. So tonight is the Pinyon Canyon Environmental Impact Statement discussion, the training and operations. We did the scoping meeting a few months ago. I know many of you were there. This is actually quite a much larger crowd, which is awesome, much larger than we usually see. And we appreciate you coming out here to Pinyon Canyon, where you can see all the different types of equipment that we have out there on static display to kind of get a better feel for what it is that's part of this proposed action. So tonight's agenda, basically we're going to go from around 5:15, which is when we were supposed to start tonight, to approximately 7 o'clock, just so you know when we'll be done tonight. This presentation shouldn't last more than 20, 30 minutes, just to kind of go over the highlights of the environmental impact statement, and then we'll get to the public comment period where you can speak your part or your comments that you have on the EIS that's been on the street now since October 31st. So following me will be Colonel Hamilton, and I know not everybody can see this, so I will actually read some of the slides for you, so if that helps. So the welcome will be by Colonel Hamilton. We'll do a review of the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, by Hal Alguire. Review of the Fort Carson units, the training requirements, and the EIS itself. That'll be done by Dan Benford. And then I'll go through the public comment session, where I'll facilitate folks coming up and talking and being able to submit your comments in other methods. And then we'll have a closing remarks by Colonel Hamilton. So I'll be followed by Colonel Hamilton. Go ahead, sir.
Is that my cue?
Yes, okay. Sir.
All right.
There's your mic.
All right.
Tested.
Do I need a mic for the public record? Is that why I need the mic?
No, sir.
I prefer to roam if I could.
Roam at will.
Okay. So my name is Joel Hamilton. I met several folks that are familiar in here about 6 months ago. Both when we conducted the initial scoping meeting for the environmental impact statement in the town of Trinidad and also in the town of La Junta. So just kind of trying to keep in line with the points on the slide here, because they try to keep me in a box a little bit. We have been working closely with not only the Southern Colorado Working Group in several meetings since that meeting that we all came together in May. We've had several meetings with that group, as well as the seven different Native American tribes, and working closely with the State Historical Preservation Office in terms of programmatic agreements, in addition to the environmental impact statement. All that has happened in the last 6 months. This is a continuation of that process. Okay, so one thing I've asked the folks that are going to be talking tonight from Fort Carson and the Pinyon Canyon maneuver site is that one thing we're often very guilty of in the U.S. Army and Department of Defense is we tend to throw a lot of acronyms around. Okay, so we will really try hard, and if we throw an acronym out there and we don't explain what it is, please somebody ask what it is. Okay, so you're going to hear things like NEPA and SHPO and things like that. So, in my defense, when I SHPO, that was the State Historical Preservation Office, okay? So I said that up front, all right? And NEPA is the National Environmental Policy Act, and that's going to be they're going to do a little bit deeper dive in terms of what the Policy Act of 1969 mandates that the Department of Defense do. So with respect to the National Environmental Policy Act of 1969, that's why we're here tonight, is to hear public comment. And some of you that will register to make comments tonight, you may, during the course of your comments, you may want to ask a question. We strongly encourage that, all right? And we will capture that. The court reporter will capture that, and my staff will take those questions. We will review them, and we will answer those in their entirety as we continue to refine the draft of the environmental impact statement and capture the answers to those questions that you have in the final drafting of the environmental impact statement. Okay, so, and I understand that we have some folks here that have some significant concerns. Some of those concerns were expressed back in May, and that's what makes this country great. That's why I wear this uniform. All right, I'm proud to tell you that in the last 26 years of service, I've deployed when my nation called, and I've been to places that where you don't have peaceful transfer of authority. You don't have the opportunity to express concerns in a public forum like what we're trying to get at tonight. Okay, so that's truly what makes this country great, and I certainly don't take it for granted, and we really do welcome what comments you have to bring to the table. And again, let me just stress, if I had to beat a drum on an issue, nowhere in the environmental impact statement, and let me just say for the record, officially for the record, that we are not about expansion of Pinyon Canyon maneuver site. The reason why we are relooking the environmental impact statement is because of the regulatory nature of the NEPA, the fact that we have added additional combat vehicles to the fleet at Fort Carson, and we had static displays, and I hope you guys got the opportunity to speak to soldiers out there and get the opportunity to have them explain to you what they do, what the capabilities are of their systems. But because of those capabilities and the expansion of capabilities, we are required to take a serious, very in-depth, thorough look at what impact those types of capabilities will have or could have on the environment so that we can make smart decisions on how to mitigate that impact to the environment. That's what this is all about. So tonight we're going to lay out a lot of the environmental impact statement alternatives, things that we're looking at, and then in turn you guys will have the opportunity, please, to express the concerns you may have. And on that note, I'm going to ask Mr. Hal Alguire, the director of Public Works, to say some things. Thank you,
sir. Thank you, and thanks to all of you for coming here tonight. I've got two slides I want to cover real quick, and quite frankly, Colonel Hamilton stole a little bit of my thunder. And I know many of you know that NEPA stands for the National Environmental Protection Policy Act. It was an act that Congress, President signed back in the late 1960s. It basically says, as a federal entity, Department of Defense, we are required under the law to look at the impacts associated with any proposed actions that we're taking. And in this particular case, we're looking at different vehicle down here at Pinyon Canyon and different kinds of training that are going to be covered here in a minute that was laid out in the draft environmental impact statement. So the Federal Register back in 31 October, a few weeks ago, announced that the draft of the environmental impact statement is available to the public. There's a 45-day comment period that we're into now. We sincerely want to get in comments from the public to help us do a better job of analyzing impacts in the document. So that's why we're here tonight. And again, thank you very much for coming. Next slide. So the purpose of an environmental impact statement, as I've stated and Colonel Hamilton mentioned, is for us to do an analysis of the proposed actions and look at environmental, cultural, social, economic impacts that might be there based on those proposed actions. And so that's what we're doing. We also look at potential mitigation if there are impacts to those proposed actions. And that's what that environmental impact statement document does. We have a draft, and tonight hopefully we'll get some good comments, and that'll help us continue to analyze what we need to in that document. Ultimately, We staff the document. That EIS is signed by the Army, and then we, from that, develop a record of decision that the decision maker in the Army then looks at or signs up and says, here's what the Army is going to do as a proposed action. It could be whatever alternatives that are laid out in the EIS. The decision maker will decide based on the EIS what we do as proposed actions and what mitigation we'll make sure we cover in that. So that's the record of decision that we get to once we finish the EIS. So that's my bit of discussion, and I'm going to turn it over to Dan Benford, who is our Director of Plans, Training, Mobilization, that's going to talk a little bit more about the proposed actions.
Oh, thanks. When do you think the EIS will be out?
Say again?
When do you think the final will be
out? The final EIS? What's our schedule? Final EIS? I think we have it in the slide.
Well, it's 30 days after. I'll just go ahead and read it forward ahead here so everybody can see it. So we've got the 45-day comment period ends the 15th, so we have to have time to go back and take in all the edits or the comments and make edits to the EIS before we publish it. So the actual timeline, looking around, I owe that to you. By the time I get up, I'll give that to you.
I think our record of decision timeline following the finalization of the EIS, I think it's in the April time frame. It's a schedule right now, so that's where we are. Okay,
Dan. Good evening, everybody. My name is Dan Benford. I'm the Director of Plans, Training, Mobilization, and Security. I officially have one of the bigger titles. Part of my responsibility is ensuring that our soldiers receive the training that they need to deploy, survive, and come home in one piece. I'll be discussing the purpose and the need of the EIS. The purpose of the EIS is to analyze the potential environmental impacts of the changes that are being proposed at Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site so the Army can make an informed decision. To review a little bit about what those proposed actions are, we lost a brigade, an armored brigade combat team, had an armored brigade combat team convert to strikers. So that is the loss of 577 tracked combat vehicles and the gain of 336 striker variants like you saw outside. Also being considered are several new types of training to advance the capabilities for training at the Pinyon Canyon maneuver sites so our soldiers can fully utilize new equipment, new tactics, and new technology. Because of dangers to civilian non-participating aircraft by some of that training, we're also considering restricted airspace over the existing training site and the establishment of two new parachute drop zones for the parachuting of personnel and equipment from aircraft. The need. Everyone here knows what's going on in our world today. I don't have to go into very good detail, but we live in a world of uncertainty. Our adversaries, those who would do us harm, are constantly evolving their tactics and techniques to exploit our weaknesses and vulnerabilities. Our tactics, as the Army, have to also evolve and change to counter their change. Our technologies are constantly advancing. We get new equipment, new weapons, and our training style, our tactics evolve, so we have to be able to keep up with our enemy's change. A little bit about our 4th Infantry Division at Fort Carson. We are now the most diverse division in the Army. We have the only division that has an armored brigade combat team, a striker brigade combat team, an infantry brigade combat team, Combat Aviation Brigade, and the 10th Special Forces Group. We are truly the most diverse Army division. We can fight anywhere, anytime, for any mission. That's how we must train. Our soldiers and units need the ability to train at Pinyon Canyon on the equipment and the tactics that they will rely on when they're in danger. When we put them in harm's way, they have to have that second nature reaction with their equipment. That's what our need is. Next slide, Rob. I want to go through the three alternatives in this EIS. There are three. The first is the no-action alternative. It means what it states. The no-action alternative would mean that nothing changes at Pinyon Canyon. We continue to train with the vehicles and the tactics that we train with today. We also would not change the 4.4 to 4.7 months of use a year for brigade-level training exercises. What this alternative does for us in the EIS is it serves as the benchmark for the other proposed actions. Next slide, Rob. Proposed action alternative 1A also does not exceed 4.4 to 4.7 months of use a year for brigade level training at Pinyon Canyon. What it does is it updates the different compositions of our units and the training methods that were described in the 1980 EIS. It will enable the training using Stryker combat vehicles by the Stryker Brigade at Fort Carson. It also develops and implements a new brigade training intensity calculation and measurement. How we got to the training intensity model in the EIS is based on Army doctrine. TC-25-1 is a training circular that identifies a standard maneuver area by unit type. For instance, you hear me talk about a box or a lane a lot whenever we have our public meetings and our Southern Colorado Working Group. What that does is it depicts what size of training area a certain type of Army unit needs to conduct its mission essential task to Army standards that would ensure that they are ready to deploy into harm's way. We've taken the length of that box and calculated it to miles. Then we have taken each vehicle from that brigade, every vehicle available to that brigade, and calculated the distance if they drove that box and came to total task miles. Alternative 1A does not include any of the additional types of training. Next slide. Alternative 1B incorporates everything from Alternative 1A plus the additional training types. I'll quickly review those training types and update you on where we are with those. Aviation gunnery, non-explosive. The concept is to fire non-exploding 2-inch 7.5 rockets from helicopters at temporary targets in Training Area 7 at Pinyon Canyon. From a stationary point, after the rockets are fired and the training has halted, the targets and the rockets will be policed up and removed from the training area. Flare training from helicopters and aircraft. Flares are released from aviation airframes to defeat enemy heat-seeking missiles. It is a 3 to 5 second firework, pyrotechnic, that is released from the aircraft to disrupt the sensors in a heat-seeking missile. The concept would be that we would only utilize that type of training during low fire danger, and flares would only be released 1,500 feet above ground level. Electronic jamming. Electronic jamming is intended to provide training to our military units to defeat improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. IEDs are the most prolific killer of our soldiers today overseas. Electronic warfare jamming will only be done on Department of Defense approved frequencies. This will not interfere with your cell phones, your garage door openers, or any of your personal electronic devices, television signals, etc. FCC rules apply to DOD requiring approval from the FCC to conduct any jamming of any frequencies that we do not own. We only want to train on our frequencies. Laser target designators from handheld ground vehicles and aviation platforms. Laser target designators are used in multiple ways. They gauge distance to target. They identify the grid location of the target for our forces. They also are used to guide laser-guided munitions or smart weapons to their intended target. Our guys have to be able to train on how to use laser target designators so they can function in combat. We will not and do not intend to fire any laser-guided weapons on Pinyon Canyon. Only use the laser target designators for training. Demolitions training. This is training of 25 pounds of explosives or less to breach obstacles for maneuver. We've chosen 8 sites, 5 primary and 3 alternate. The locations were chosen while considering sensitive areas. We picked these locations 1,000 meters away from any known cultural or historic sites or areas of sensitive species or concern. They are also in ideal locations for military training. Unmanned aerial system. I hope you saw the Raven. The Raven is the smaller of the two unmanned air vehicles. Shadow is the other. Shadow is 12 feet wingspan, 320 pounds. We intend to use it within our current boundaries of Pinyon Canyon only. Used for surveillance, no weapons would be involved. Unmanned ground vehicle training up to 300 pounds. The robots that you may or may not have seen outside was the PackBot and the Talon. Talon is the larger of the robots. It is used for explosives ordnance detail, surveillance, interrogation of suspected explosive packages. It is very important for our engineers and our explosives ordnance details to utilize their equipment in training, so the first time they're using it is not involving live explosives or potentially live explosives. Airspace reclassification. At our scoping meeting, we had discussed that based on safety of non-participating aircraft, we were considering restricted airspace to 10,000 feet above ground level. We have reduced that by 5,000 feet. We're trying to obtain restricted airspace for 10,000 feet mean sea level, which means 4,500 feet above ground level here at Pinyon Canyon. Drop zone development would be create 2 new drop zones in the center of Pinyon Canyon to avoid cultural resources, historic resources, sensitive species, and dangers to paratroopers. Chaff from aircraft and 120 millimeter non-explosive explosive mortars have been removed from further consideration. Next slide. During the scoping meetings, we had a few alternatives that were recommended through the comment process. The first was basically train them at other installations. For the same reason as the 1980 EIS identified, it's not really feasible for us to do that. By taking them away from home station, we're taking them away from their families. It costs a lot of money to move them to other installations that are farther away. And we lose valuable training time by transporting them and their equipment to and from. Provide soldiers with simulated training. One of my jobs at Fort Carson is simulations. I run the simulations capability at Fort Carson. We do have simulators today. We don't have enough simulators to train a large-scale force. In order to train a force this large, those type of simulators do not exist today. Also, the need for live training is going to continue as long as we have an army. And lastly, the closure of Pinyon Canyon, the Army declined to formally consider this alternative because it does not meet our need and our purpose. We need to be able to train our forces at Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site. That's all. Mr. Colonel, or you?
I'll do it.
Thank you very much.
All right, every one of these has a different tone, doesn't it? Is it the heat tonight? Well, I'm wondering, right? If you need a hydration source, let me know, because I will get you some water. We have plenty of it out here, okay? This next piece right here is the result of a lot of analysis, of course, that had occurred on behalf of Fort Carson and their contractor staff, as well as their own subject matter experts. They went in and analyzed all of these different environmental media areas to determine what the impacts would be. And lo and behold, a lot of you were right. Right? The Army agreed with you on several of these. And so what we do is we stratify these into different impacts or like impacts. There's potentially significant, potentially moderate, and minor to negligible. And you came to many of you came to these scoping meetings early on and said that, you know, the vegetation and soils would be a significant impact. Well, the Army agrees with you. Under biological resources and under soils, which is under the geology and soils section of the draft EIS, the Army concluded that there's potentially significant impacts from the proposed action that Dan had just talked about. Okay? Now, in there is a lot of detail, and then tonight's purpose is not to go through that detail. The idea of this public meeting and to take the comments from everyone here is that you've got some level of familiarity with what is in the EIS. Okay? That's not a derogatory statement. That's the purpose of these, is that we open the pages, that we look at it, and we see what it says so we can glean from you how to make it better, how to be more transparent, how to add more clarity to this process. Okay, so that's the potentially significant. At least Gene's smiling tonight. All right. Hey, thanks for. I got to have a little levity in here. Thank you.
Some people would give you an award for getting a smile out of me.
I know. Trust me. I've been here. I've done this before. So thank you. Thank you. Okay, for me. For nothing else. Okay, so potentially moderate. Airspace issues. These are all different chapters of the environmental impact statement. Airspace is potentially moderate. That'd be for the same reasons that Dan had mentioned earlier. Land use and aesthetics. Noise. Noise is always an issue when there's an Army operation, right? Shocker. Okay. Water resources, and that, a lot of that stems from the impacts of soils and erosion. Minor to negligible, air quality and greenhouse gases. Cultural resources, facilities and utilities, hazardous materials, waste and toxics, traffic and transportation, socioeconomics and environmental justice all came out. At least, and this is the draft environmental impact statement, okay? So the hint here is, take a look at it, you give us your comments, and those get addressed. That's the way this is intended to work. All right, so the timeline. We already talked about the notice of availability being issued on October 31st.
Halloween.
Yeah. The 45-day comment period ends on December 15th. Okay, so that clock's ticking. You've got many different avenues to get to collect your comments up. One of those tonight being the vocal version, which I actually like. The final EIS will be prepared once we collect all your comments. We'll take those back and we'll aggregate them all, review them, and address them. And you know that those will end up in the final EIS. And we have precedents on that, as we know, from the 2009 EIS that we did here, which is in about a 1,400-page document. Almost half of them were public comments and addresses. Okay, so sometime I told you I'd come up with a timeline. It looks like it's going to be in the spring to early summer time frame to have the final environmental impact statement out. Yeah. How to submit comments tonight? We've got a court recorder. Some of you are going to come up and you're going to speak. That's one method. There's a couple more. You've got a website that we can go to. We've got some forms over here that you can fill out. Turn those into us at the end of the evening or any time this evening, or mail them, however you want to do that.
Like I said before, you could write on the back of a cardboard box and send it. We'll collect it, put it in EIS. There's the email address, and then the oral comments tonight. And we can do oral comments, just so you know, offline too, if you don't want to do, if you don't like to speak in front of a crowd. The moment everybody's waiting for, right? To speak their mind. All right, so basically just kind of give you an overview of how this works, and I know you know this, but for some of you that don't, I'm just going to add a little bit of clarity to it. We take all these different mediums for the comments that you give us. We take them back, we look at them all, and we basically bracket them in certain media areas, which ones we can address, which ones don't apply to the environmental impact statement. Okay, and I hate to say this, because a lot of you put a lot of time and effort into and passion and energy into coming up with your comments about these EISs. If they're not specifically about this EIS, then they don't get probably the response that you're looking for, right? And there's testament to that, I know. So you spend all this time and you write up something that you feel really passionate about that has nothing to do with the EIS, it's not going to get addressed to the magnitude that you think it should. Shocker, right? Just saying, you've seen this, so I'm not saying anything new.
Are you indicating that if someone gets up and speaks and speaks their mind, that the media won't have access to that, or will that be altered?
Oh, no, that's all. It's all public. Amen, right?
But it has to pertain to what the subject is that you happen to be
on at
the moment.
All I'm saying, I'm just trying to be open as honest as I can, is if you want a good response back, then it needs to be with the EIS, on the topic of the EIS. Because some of them, as we've talked about before, are addressing things that the Army's not intending to do, and so the Army's not looking to do that.
So it won't be addressed? You mean there won't be an answer back from
the Army?
There'll
be an answer, but it won't be of anything of any magnitude.
Will that answer come in broad daylight or in the dark of night?
It'll come in the EIS. Yeah. Okay. So, we've got several folks that want to talk tonight. Which means, yep, you guessed it. There's a timeline. 3 to 5 minutes. 3 to 5 minutes. I'll say it one more time. 3 to 5, what? Minutes? Yes, 3 to 5 minutes. I know some of you will stretch this, and this is the thing I get dinged on all the time for getting a little bit of flexibility to some and not to others. I got to hold the line tonight, right? 3 to 5 minutes. 4 minutes in, I'll tell you to have your closing comments. And then when you get to that 5 minute mark, I'm going to say thank you and call the other person up. Okay? Again, I will not wrestle you off the podium, et cetera, et cetera. I don't ever want to do that for my own safety. Okay? All right, so I'll call you up, and I'll also follow that with the name of the person behind you so you know who is coming up. So time now is 5:50, and I will, if you're ready, I'll go ahead and call up the first person we have tonight. It's going to be a bit of a mystery. Wait for it. All right, India Wood. And I will butcher someone's name tonight. It's not intended to be on purpose, so please just clarify. When you come up, say your name and spell it for our court recorder, if you would. And you'll be followed by Bill Salzman.
Hi, I'm India Wood. I came down here from Boulder, Colorado. I've been coming down to Southeast Colorado since I was about 6 years old. I found a dinosaur when I was a kid, and the dinosaur trackway down in Pinyon Canyon was what really got me interested in dinosaurs. And I love to come down here and camp. And my name, India, is spelled just like the country. I'm here tonight for several reasons, and I will come on directly on the EIS, as instructed. And getting back to those dinosaur footprints, the EIS does not address whether there will continue to be access to that trackway. That's a very important cultural resource, and really at an international scale. I've taken people down there from Japan and Russia. It's very important. The other area that I feel the EIS is short on is the potential impact on wildlife. I was down in the Pinyon Canyon area a couple years ago and came upon a bighorn sheep mother and her 10-day-old baby. And even just us walking quietly through some trees and behind a rock upset her and the baby so much that they just disappeared. And I can't imagine what kind of impact munitions and drop zones would have on that. But I know Mike has some experience. I'd be curious to see this in real life. The other area where the EIS, I think, seriously underestimates the impact of these activities is the impact on the local economy in terms of potential development, further development of tourism. I come down here twice a year, I go to the cafes, I stay on ranches, I spend money, and I do that because of the wildlife. And as Pinyon Canyon becomes more active, this area is going to become less attractive to me and other people from the entire Front Range. This is an important recreation area for the entire Front Range, not just this local county. So I really think you need to take into account that larger statewide impact of modifications at Pinyon Canyon. And speaking of larger impacts, I grew up in Colorado Springs. I now live in Boulder. And the changes at PCMS really have a big impact on Colorado Springs, too, because Fort Carson is on the BRAC list, and I assume that the desire to expand activities at Pinyon Canyon is an effort to make Fort Carson more attractive for continued troop presence. And of course, if you can't do that, that is going to affect Colorado Springs' economy. It is significant. But I think the EIS needs to own up to that, that there is an important economic factor here with Colorado Springs. Finally, there's some broader issues. I'm wondering whether there are other military areas which are better suited than Pinyon Canyon for these activities. It seems like the EIS is pretty clear that there are some substantial impacts. Maybe there's another part of the country that would be better for this and more receptive to it. And again, this larger context of the Fort Carson, that there's potentially going to be a troop reduction, is this all going to be needed in the long term? My other question would be, how has Fort Carson got along without this in the past? So thank you very much, and I appreciate you having us here tonight.
Thank you. Bill Soltner, there you are, Bill. All right, you'll be followed by, all right, Barb, you're going to have to help me. Leininger? Barb Leininger? Did I get it right?
No.
Darn it. All right, you know who you are.
Yeah, my name is Bill Sulzman, S-U-L-Z-M-A-N. I'm from Colorado Springs. I have 2 points to address in my comments, but
Bill,
before...
can I get you to speak inside the microphone?
Oh,
sorry,
into
it. Okay.
Can't
hear. My bad. You have to raise it up for a guy your size.
A couple of things here ad-lib before I get to my written comments. One, I was part of that big majority of people who came to the scoping hearing who said this place ought to be closed. And, of course, we're disappointed that that was summarily dismissed as one line in the report. The other is I had hoped, based on some press reports that said we could come down here and take a look around. I presumed that would be look at some of these ranges that are going to be involved in this more intense training. But, you know, we got a little show and tell out there with strikers and not even very much of that. My 2 points to address in my comments related to the EIS. The first one is, it is very difficult to establish new impact areas at military bases. This EIS cuts corners to establish one at PCMS. The use of the designation demolition areas instead of impact areas works to get in explosives such as, and we heard is the size of these things up to 25 pounds, C4, TNT, trinitrotoluene, and various incendiary devices without the hassle of establishing an impact area as such. To me, this seems disingenuous. The second comment relates to something that I work on a lot, and that is this EIS sets up a major expansion of land and air use at PCMS. Two other expansion plans are running their course in the same time frame. One is a proposal by Fort Carson for 43 landing zones in BLM lands overseen by the Royal Gorge Office of the BLM. The other is a plan to make extensive use of an Air Force landing strip called Bullseye on the Eastern Plains near Ellicott. And this kind of gets into NEPA language. It is a classic case, I believe, of piecemealing, of dealing with proposals in a separate way as though they were not part of a bigger whole. And that's a no-no with NEPA. And it's a similar concept is the notion of cumulative effect. And I would say that is brought into play by treating these things as separately when in fact they are part of one whole.
Okay, you'll be followed by Jim Harrell.
My name is Barb Leininger. We ranch in southeastern Colorado. I already had a really wonderful experience on our ranch several years ago. We're a family ranch. There are four of us. Me, my husband, and two kids. We were attempting to sort cattle one day. When you're the wife and the kids, your job is to hold 400 head of cattle. And dad sorts. Well, there were some of your people, I assume. I'm not sure they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. Two guys in military-looking aircraft chose to play right above us for about 2 hours. Rolling, turning around, chasing each other, having a really good time. We don't live really, really close to Pinyon Canyon. But we live between Colorado Springs and Pinyon Canyon. We already have C-130s flying over our house so low that we can't hear each other speak inside our home. That's a pretty good social impact. So I don't know what your plan is from getting from there to here, but it doesn't look like a very good one for me. And it didn't work out very well on that day. Unfortunately, who do you call? And who's going to believe you? Because it's their word against ours. We're told that we are the largest intact short grass prairie and that all these people have to come and help preserve us. The Nature Conservancy, the Palmer Land Trust. When you do a little digging, you find out that the Nature Conservancy has a whole lot of Department of Defense contracts. So I'm not sure that they're really our friend. You've not been a good neighbor in the past. We've been really close to having fire on some of our ranch land, and some of our neighbors have been the recipients of Pinyon Canyon fire. And what did they get for it? Gosh, we're really sorry. In the big cities, we hear one of the greatest threats to our open space is urban sprawl. The greatest threat to our livelihood is military sprawl. We We own a Cessna 182. We have some canyon country that's really hard to get to, especially when it's muddy or it's snowy. So my husband is a pilot. He jumps in the plane in Lahana Airport and flies down and flies over it to check water, to check cattle. Will we still be able to do that? When you go off the edge, sure enough, we're right over parts of Pinyon Canyon. It's always been free for us to do that. That's something that we use. That's part of our livelihood. I don't see anything telling us that we'll still be able to do that. It looks to me like this is more of the kid in the candy store. I want that. I want that. And then you pretty soon it's, oh, but we don't have enough land to do what we did. We expanded. We were doing these airspace things. So now we need another 250,000 acres. Oh, there are only 70 ranch families. It's not a big deal. You guys need to understand, we are not poor. We do not need your money. We make a very good living here, and most of us are college educated, and we choose to live here because we never thought that the Army or anyone else would want what we have. Close we up. Have paid for it with our money, and now we've paid for yours with our money as well.
All right, Jenny will be followed by Belinda. Belinda.
Brother?
Ah, thank you.
I'm going to mind to Jean. She gets my 4 minutes. Or 3 minutes.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that the plan?
That's
you
clever.
Didn't put that on the sheet. I got you.
My name is Jim Harrell. I'm a citizen of the United States. I'm very proud of that. I'm no longer the vice president of Otero Junior College. I had a wonderful career. And I'm sorry that this meeting isn't in warmer confines of some of our great community colleges in this part of Colorado. Okay, the commercial's over. To the Army and their civilian employees, welcome to southeastern Colorado. The people in uniform rotate. The people in this room whose boots are a little more pointy and wearing cowboy hats don't. After so many years, I can now respectfully refer to all our soldiers in this room as younger people. A difficult reality about being a younger person is that you have no institutional memory. Persons in uniform will be stationed at Fort Carson for a while. I examined the oath of enlistment and the oath of office. Both include support and defend the Constitution of the United States. The big challenge for the young people in uniform in this room is that you have sworn to uphold all of the Constitution of the United States, just not the part that's convenient. And there are other people in this room that will use that same Constitution to make a very strong case for a different outcome. When I was a younger man in the town of Lahana, we had a significant population of military personnel. Children went to our schools, families were in our churches, they bought food in our stores when they couldn't get to the PX, cars from our dealerships, gasoline, they recreated and they married, and almost all of their buildings were portable. The DEIS appears that what we get behind what door number one, door number two, or door number three. And if you get door number three, you also get door number two. Let's look a little deeper. After all this analysis, the decision maker lies somewhere below the Pentagon. And that's like asking a coyote to go into a chicken house. And he comes out in the morning, wiping the feathers off his face, and saying, "No damage of significance." It dawned on me that it is significant that the DEIS, became part of the Federal Register on Halloween.
Yes.
Halloween is the day we wear masks, so we disguise ourselves and we shout trick or treat. And here's what I think the trick is. Today I headed down here early. I walked up on a rise and I looked at tracks made by wooden wagons hauling freight in the 1800s. You can still see those tracks. And I read where the draft EIS spoke of no significant damage again. A couple of colleagues and I that are in this room clearly established in federal court a few years ago that, in fact, what you're doing now rips that land to pieces. I didn't go look at the Stryker vehicle, but I'm just a guessing. With a golf course mentality, after we tromp through here, then we send the greenskeeper out to see if he can fix things. I want our young people in this room in uniform to be the best trained in the world. I believe that they are. I believe in Colonel Hamilton. I believe in this work. I believe there are evil people in this world, and I believe for the most part we probably ought to take them out. I can't find a way not to do it. We will thank you for your service. In an unusual human behavior, we are going to thank you for your service, not just in uniform, but for the rest of your life, and mean it very sincerely. I'll hurry.
You got it.
Rob and I are old friends. There's a statement in the notice of this meeting that says, and let me read it quickly. Rob, I'm hurrying.
No, just...
The proposed action does not include, nor would it require, the expansion of the Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site. That's like saying to someone starting a sentence with, I don't mean to cause problems, but that's a big red flag. Tactics-wise, don't say that. Don't say that. Put it in the War College. Don't say stuff like that. If you keep expanding the infrastructure at Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site as early as 3, probably by 5, and for sure by 7 years from now, there will be a small note in the congressional record about an authorization to acquire more land. And don't you think there won't be? Then there will be a congressman, probably from Texas, that will tack on an appropriations amendment to some crap to buy more land. And everyone in this room in uniform will be gone. And everyone in this room with a cowboy hat and boots that are pointed will be here, will be just a little older. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Still not sure how you tied in Halloween there, but I'm always amazed. All right, Fritz Sturgis. He'll be followed by Joseph Riorda.
Sturgis, S-T-U-R-G-E-S. They don't know how to spell in South Dakota, never did learn. I ranch east of here. My family homesteaded New Mexico. I watched the Army steal White Sands Missile Range for the Trinity site, continue on to El Paso, Fort Bliss. You have adequate property, sir. And the question that I have, seriously, you want to close the airspace? What the hell are you hiding? Why can't we look at it? That's all I need.
I always have to add a point of clarity here. The facilitator, okay? I'm the facilitator. All right. Thank you, Fritz.
Who's kind of you?
I did go over. I have to cut myself 5 minutes short next time. Oh, I know you.
Do I get the time that he didn't use?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Contrary to what people think, let me introduce myself. My name is Joseph Riorda. I'm the mayor of Trinidad, Colorado. And my wife hasn't forgiven me for running for the last mayor's job. I was a mayor from 2000 to 2008 when we were in the midst of fighting with the Army, and we supported the farmers. And contrary to what you might think, I'm not a city slicker. I've been accused of that. I'm an educator. I was in education for 41 years. Taught United States history. We're here today because somebody fought for us and was trained somewhere. When you have a baby, you have to train him to go to the potty. If there's no potty, he does it outside, correct? I understand where you're coming from. We supported Mac Loudon for county commissioner because we need people that live in the county, work and suffer in the county. And it took him 80 years to teach me that agriculture is an industry. We keep talking about coal mines and gas and all this stuff, and we forget that the poor farmer that works 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, is not an industry. We support you. The city of Trinidad supports you. But by God, we have to have somewhere to train. And you know, it reminded me when we were talking about this. In 2002, we had 5.5 feet of snow in Trinidad, and I was the mayor. And by the way, let me introduce one of my colleagues, Mr. Joe Venato, who's sitting back there trying to say, hurry up, Joe, shut your mouth, get down here. A lady called me and said, they're pushing snow over in front of my garage. I said, where do you want to put 5.5 feet of snow? Well, put it in Mrs. Jones's house. I said, oh, it's okay to put it in Miss Jones's house, but you don't want it in your house. And that's what we're saying here. All I'm asking you to do is please, Colonel Hamilton, I don't want to close it. I want to keep it. But I want to do it with a little sense and respect for their serving us in uniform. Colonel Hamilton's here, brand new. He's already taken a beating. Let's give him a chance. Why would they lie to you? What have they done? History books, if it wasn't for the history books, we wouldn't be sitting here with the freedom to do what we're doing tonight, bitching about stupid stuff, right? Thank you, by God.
God bless you.
All right, Esther Cass? Did I say the last name right? Okay. Yeah, it's kind of tough back there. And you'll be followed by Daryl Shoup. Daryl Shoup. There he is. All right. I got you. Did I get the name?
Yep, you did.
I got a sticker.
Like the destroyer USS Scout DDG-86.
Okay, I hope people can hear me. I've got a loud enough mouth to start with.
Do you want
to
use that?
We'll see how far it goes. A couple of things. Yes, we do need a place for our military to train. Short and sweet, what Mr. Riorda said. As far as history goes, those who do not study history are doomed to repeat it. Part of my family is French, Irish, German, and the other half was Cherokee, who met the first half at the boat. And I seem to remember a comment from the Army to the native peoples that this land will be yours as long as the grass will grow and the water will flow. Mr. Riorda, guess what? Water's still growing, water's still flowing, grass is still growing, but there have been some things that didn't match up anymore. This is why there is, what would you say, a dichotomy, and do we trust people? Not totally. And somebody in Raton said a comment one time, trust everybody, but brand your calves. We're just trying to brand our calves.
Get you? All right. Gene, you're next.
Can we make sure they spell their names?
Oh, yeah. Can you spell your name? Can you say your name? Would you spell it again?
Shout.
For our court recorder? Thank you.
Hello. My name is Daryl Shoup, S-H-O-U-P. It used to have an E on it when we came over. The Ellis Island took it off. I'm from Germany originally, both sides of my family. I'm on both sides of this. I Eagle Scout and the Boy Scouts, environmental badge. I'm really concerned about a lot of stuff. Grandfather, brother, come out of the Marine Corps, World War II, Korean War. David Monroe Shoup has the 25th Congressional Medal of Honor. I like to figure out the positive and the negative of everything. And the biggest thing is it's needed in our country somewhere. I don't think anyone here would argue that somewhere in the country. Then I ran businesses, managers, many companies. I think a distance is some of their logic. Is there other areas? I don't know. I haven't done all the research in distances, but I figure some people are going to be impacted, and it's going to be negative. Scale 1 to 10, everything falls in between somewhere. So you're never going to be at the 1 or you're going to be at the 10 or 1 to 100, what have you, somewhere in between. So no matter where this goes down at, it's got to go down, but where? We need to be compensated for it. If there's some, I'm a pilot, I fly twin-inch beach baron. The lady was up here, not first of all, she said something happened and there were rolls. You need to know how to fly. I try to fly nice and steady. I don't want to go parallel. That's crazy. But you need to have these skill sets. But there's laws that they have to fly at least 1,000 feet over an area. Now, they're restricted if you own land. And I don't know what to say about that. That's something that we may not be able to fix all of this stuff. But if I heard something about a calving time of the year and certain things that could be benefited, if anyone lost anything, government's sure good about printing money, isn't it? Let's go ahead and make sure people's pockets get filled in here. If you guys get negatives and you own land or you're restricted, someone should be writing you a check on that oil spill out in the Gulf that was out in international waters, what have you. The people that it affected, they got some sort of compensation. I'm not familiar with anything, and I've heard that people should get compensated if you can't fly your plane over your cattle. You bought your land, you had your thoughts. Maybe you could find some ways in some of these issues. If they're going to blow stuff up, can they put it back? I don't know. There's never going to be 100% on any issue. That's all. No one's going to go one way, no one's going to go the other way. So I'm all for the need for this and the fact that it goes down. I want it to go down. I want it safe. I see this stuff happen in the world. Makes me nervous as crap. I have a 10-year-old. I live here in Trinidad, by the way, and I've lived all over the country. So I don't know. But I just hope that everyone can use their intelligence and to figure out what's really best, because they got to weigh out all this stuff. And if you get a negative impact, you should get something back for that. That's the drum I'm beating. We got a big printing press, prints out money. And if there's something or special permits, I don't know how to go about it all and all the problems of this. But I see it. I know there are problems and questions. And that's all I have to say, I try to unite everyone.
All right.
She's got my minutes now. Don't forget.
No. Well, I put you right behind her. Get that, huh?
Yeah.
See?
Good. Yeah, good.
You played your hand.
Perfect. So I just made some notes tonight. We've gone through the EI. The
name and.
Oh, sorry. Jean Aguirre. J E A N Aguirre. A G U E R R E. Thanks very much. We've gone through the DEIS already a lot, but I just to address some notes I've made tonight since you've been speaking. It's sort of like hard for me to believe that you would reference a 1980 EIS. 34 years ago, all it does for us is bring up really, really bad memories. They came down and took this land and started condemnations out of nowhere, at a time where there was no national security threat that the military, who was already handsomely provided for by every taxpayer in this country, couldn't handle. It was for politics. So when you mention the 1980 EIS, you bring all of that up. That you want to mimic 4.7 years of use out of that EIS makes no environmental sense. Makes no environmental sense whatsoever. We got a soil analysis in this current DEIS with absolutely no root analysis. The key to the shortgrass prairie, as everybody in this room knows, is keeping that root system intact. if that root system is ripped up the way it was by the Homesteading Act, which required people to plow, it brought on the 1930s Dust Bowl. The devastation inside PCMS now is significant. The drought is still with us. We are not out of a drought cycle. We're pulling out of a drought cycle. There is no root analysis in this entire EIS because it seems to me that the military is trying to tell us, and their contractors, that meaningful mitigation can happen on the short grass prairie when the root system has been entirely ripped out. And it's not true. CRP lands will blow as easily as raw dust in the right conditions. 18 to 20 years later, after successful, what they call successful CRP transplants, the roots are still almost too shallow for meaningful measurement. So, you know, to try to sell us a bill of goods that CRP land, the native prairie, can be reseeded, and that is meaningful mitigation, just does not lend credibility to this project. Does not. In fact, it proves our point that Pinyon Canyon never belonged here. The U.S. military is not short of training land. What has happened with electronic warfare is that technology has been proliferated, market saturated, without any publicly disclosed studies about what it will take to operate drone weapon systems, to come into electromagnetic spectrums, to use vast areas of land. The technology was proliferated before the studies were done, and we're not willing to pay the piper for it, just like we shouldn't have paid the piper in 1980 when there was no military need. Do we live in a troubled world? Yes, we do. And the Department of Defense, we provide $750 billion a year. If the Department of Defense cannot figure it out on that, God help you, I don't know what to do. Here's another big missing part about this EIS. So Fort Carson, who really didn't do this EIS, a contractor did this EIS. The DEIS goes back and forth to sort of making you think that it's just Fort Carson they're talking about, and then you get hints once in a while that there are a lot of other people with similar equipment training at Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site. But never are any of the cumulative effects of everything that's happened out there for the last 34 years, or anything that is projected to happen with more than Fort Carson. Fort Carson is the manager, the scheduler, and one of the users of Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site. And it doesn't make any sense that there's no cumulative impacts. We have no idea what the condition of the land is, according to this document. We have no idea how many trainings there will be, what's envisioned of these trainings, who's been scheduled in the past. And even with Freedom of Information Act requests, we have not been able to obtain that information. So talk about transparency. I mean, you know, it's lacking. And it's just time to close and go.
Hey, Belinda, thank you. Belinda, did you... You good?
I can't remind.
I'm just making sure. She didn't use it all, so that's... All right.
I'll talk for a minute, then.
I lured you in, did I?
Talked me into it, see?
All right.
Hi, my name is Belinda Groner. It's G-R-O-N-E-R. I live in southeast Colorado, Fritz Sturgis. And besides Pinyon Canyon, and I know I'm not supposed to talk about besides Pinyon Canyon, but I'm going to say one thing real quick. During this whole Pinyon Canyon thing, the timing just might be coincidental, but we've had conservation easements that went south on people where they tried to steal their land. We've had malicious prosecutions throughout these counties close to Pinyon Canyon. In fact, there's 29 of them, and where if no, in Los Animas County. and a few others I know of. So maybe it's all coincidental, and maybe it's not. But the fact that all these people who put conservation easements lost their land, or their, excuse me, the value for their conservation, and are now financially fighting, just happens to be the same timing that all this happened with Pinyon Canyon. Now, I'm kind of an accounting person, so I lay the datelines down, and I just encourage each and every one of you to look at what else is going on that could be coincidental and probably is what is causing the mistrust and what's going on. So there's a bigger picture here, and we just need to find out what that is. But I do not believe they need the extra space and the land they have. I think there's enough places they could go to do their training. Thank you.
All right, Doug, Holsey.
You shouldn't let me sit down.
Oh, that your record, that's a minute.
That was fast.
Doug Holdreed, followed by Rebecca Goodwin.
My name is Doug Holdreed, spelled like you hold a book and read it, H-O-L-D-R-E-E-D. And I'm a member of the Pinyon Canyon Expansion Opposition Coalition, and a member of Citizens for Peace and Space, and a member of the Pueblo Chapter of Veterans for Peace. Each time another EIS comes along, I have kind of an internal argument with myself as to whether or not there's any value in participating. This time, that internal argument was settled by the words of an Army general. He said, "Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together." Those were the words of Dwight Eisenhower upon leaving the presidency. This NEPA process, I think, is important for two reasons. Not because this EIS is going to get rewritten or the plans will be changed because of anything that we, alert and knowledgeable citizens, have to say, but because this is an opportunity for us to be those kinds of citizens that Ike envisioned. This is our opportunity to the NEPA law really requires that the Army do this out in the open, in front of the public, involving the public, with members of the media and with representatives of elected officials here. So I'm glad that we have this open process, and I'm glad for the National Environmental Policy Act. The other reason for doing this is in case down the line any of us feel like we need to pursue an issue with our elected representatives or within the court system, this gives us standing. They won't be able to say to us, "Well, where were you when you had the opportunity to speak your mind? You know, we don't see any that you said anything at the EIS meetings." So this is important, just to establish the fact that we did speak our minds. There's no need to buy into secret agendas to get a vivid picture of the destruction that's going to happen as a result of the stuff that's described in this EIS. There are three categories that are described and classified as that will suffer a significant adverse effect. And that word significant is really kind of a euphemism for severe, you know, the top level of destructive impact. The three areas that are identified as significant are the soil, the water, and the wildlife and the plants, the living things that exist along with that soil and that water. This EIS says that 62% of the soil is highly susceptible to wind erosion. Once destroyed, the deep-rooted native grasses take years to reestablish. Large-scale maneuvers will strip the ground, producing dust storms, which could cause depopulation of counties to the east, all the way to the Kansas and Oklahoma borders. The EIS says that all this can be mitigated, another euphemism for less catastrophic, made to be less catastrophic, if funding is available. Now, we all know that funding is a big if. In fact, the Army says that the reason we only have this one meeting out here in the boondocks is because there's no funding for additional meetings. So if the Army can't afford to put on more than one meeting, how can we be assured that they'll have funding for mitigation purposes? In the original EIS, the transformation EIS, 850 people attended these meetings. There were three of them. I would like to see the comment period extended. I'd like to see an additional 45 days so that we can really, instead of trying to make it hard for people to participate, make it easy for them to participate. I'd like to see three more meetings, one in La Junta, and one in Trinidad, and one in Colorado Springs, like last time. I'd like to see this thing opened up. I'd like to see all of the issues addressed. I suggested an alternative that would transfer the most fragile archaeological sites in the Hogback Cultural Corridor to a different agency of the federal government would be fine with me, or to a local redevelopment authority. That land cannot be used for training. It's too precious. These are our precious archaeological resources, Native American and historical. These should be belong to us as a public. These should be assets for heritage tourism, for so that we can visit them, so that people can come to this area and visit them. Why are we paying our military to stand guard over our archaeological treasures? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. There's three folks left. We've got to get through all of them. Is that a hint?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
And for Russ, because as I usually, everybody knows, I come up here with very detailed written
names.
Notes. Oh, I'm sorry. Rebecca Goodwin, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, Goodwin, G-O-O-D-W-I-N. And I usually have very specific written notes. I don't have that this time. I have notes, but not what I usually have, for a very good reason. And this has to do with there needs to be more time and there needs to be more meetings. We received the draft EIS with a 45-day comment period. And Section 106, Historic National Historic Preservation Act, has to be done in conjunction with an action like this. It's done separately. It can be done concurrently, but it has to be done separately. And Otero County on... get my notes here. The comment period for this began on October 31st. On October 2nd, we got a letter from the Army that was dated September 24th. It takes a long time for it to get to us. Our Takara Preservation Inc. in Denver arrived on October 2nd, and it said the information for the Section 106 for the National Historic Preservation Review would be forwarded no later than November 1st. We got it on November 10th. It's a little hard when you look at that and you look at a 460-page EIS and try and analyze that and look at those things because they go together. And then yesterday, we received the annual cultural resource report that's part of the programmatic agreement arrived yesterday, which makes it, again, a little bit hard to review all these things. So my notes are not as good as usual. But I will say, as Jim said, there are a lot of us that we've been here and we will be here, and the Army's going to come and go. My family is one of our centennial ranchers of Otero County. We've been there for over 100 years. And earlier this year, my father was recognized as the first ever Colorado Centennial Rancher. He was 100 on September 13th. He has been here on the same land for 100 years. It is our family, and my niece and nephew and great niece and nephew will take over our ranch. We're in that process right now. We're not going anywhere. And this land means a lot to us. My father survived the Depression, the Dust Bowl, an attempt by the Army in 1962 to want to train around Tempest, which was pushed back. He survived the 1980s. He testified. He fought against what happened in 1980 and 81 and 82 and 83, and it was too late by then. And I have said this before, and I will say it again. When an EIS states that this land was purchased in 1983, you are not trying to be a good neighbor. You're not your revisionist history, and that is wrong. It was the largest condemnation action in American history. Do not say that's you right. Purchased it in 1983. So, having gone through these things, and I'm looking at specifically things as I do from the historic and cultural standpoint, and once again, I will say that the Army has missed the point in many ways. There is a programmatic agreement now which does streamline some things, but it does not exempt them from looking at the cumulative effects and the effects. Once again, the effects do not stop at the fence line. They go through this whole region. You talk about laser targeting. They talk about demolitions. Currently, only half-pound charges have been used for training here. The EIS proposes to use up to 25-pound charges of C4, TNT, other things. I'm not an explosive person, but I can understand charges, with 960 individual demolitions per year. And does anybody really believe that in this atmosphere, in this area, that sound does not travel across the fence line?
That's just for Carson, not the rest of the
business. Yeah. You talk about the aerials, you talk about these things. As we go into the noise, and I will say, a cultural landscape, this is what all the area around here is, a working landscape. It's historic. The land, the uses, the economy, the heritage, the historic resources, the natural environment is all intermingled. It all goes together in a working landscape. Yet, the EIS says that noise traveling off post may continue to discourage development, disturb sensitive residences, and impact nearby livestock and ranching activities. You're damaging the working landscape. It says demolition training could result in moderate increases in noise from 0.25 pound to 25-pound charges. That's more than a minor increase in noise. There could be impacts from nighttime flares to visibility. Visibility and atmosphere.
Did you want to donate your time? Okay. Continue.
Thank you. We've been here before.
That's one less person, by the way.
Yep. Atmosphere, night sky, peace and quiet, cattle. These are all parts of a working landscape. We do not separate those. And yet, the noise is going to stop at the fence line. The flares are going to stop at the fence line. And there's going to be no impact and no cumulative impact to those around us. The EIS also says that there will be no negligible economic impact. They're not going to put anything into our economy. They admit that. But do they really think that they're not taking anything away? When you are impacting these ranches, you are impacting their values. We've gone through this for years under the threat of expansion. Now you're not expanding outside the fence line, but you are impacting the values. Who is going to move in here and buy one of these historic ranches that have been in these families for 100 years with this across the fence line? It will not happen. Okay? The other thing is it talks about aviation, and for those of you who have not read, and I have, the whole thing, the airspace components, include Pinyon Canyon LZ, 6 DZs, the Pinyon Canyon 3 MOAs, areas of operation. They extend almost to Trinidad. They extend to La Junta. They go over our ranch at Tempest. They go over Leininger's ranch. But they say everything's going to stop at the fence line. But they also talk about those areas of operations of low-altitude helicopters. And to say that they will stay inside the fence lines goes against a rancher on the south side of the canyon who earlier this year, caught a Army helicopter setting on a National Register-eligible Hispanic site. They went sightseeing. Know where to begin next.
3 minutes worth.
Thank you.
How's that? Perfect. Thank you.
When they reclassify the IMO and the RA, they say they're going to go up, they've dropped it, they're only going to go restricted airfare up to 5,000 feet. But what they don't say, and we've gone through this in the previous things with the CAB, with the LAT, and with that, they're talking it down to 550 feet, and we've seen it. That impacts historic resources, adobe houses, stone houses. Kathy, you've been having it from helicopters. It impacts all the historic resources. It impacts the environment. It impacts the atmosphere. It impacts the working landscape, which is historic. This EIS has not looked at those things. They've not looked at the cumulative, and they've looked at everything stopping at the fence line, which is not appropriate. Federal law says that as they do this, they have to look at the cumulative effects and they have to use the cultural landscape approach. That is a requirement of the laws. You cannot segment things and say, oh, well, we're only going to look at this, we're only going to look at that, this doesn't matter. It's a cumulative of all those things. The EIS states at 3.2.1.7 aesthetics. The surrounding landscape is similar to that of the PCMS. It is predominantly rural in character and characterized by limited development. I will say, the surrounding landscape used to be similar to the PCMS. Yeah. It no longer is, thank God. But we want it to stay as it is. We do not want it to become as a PCMS. This will not stop. The impacts will not stop at the fence line, and it will impact all of us. It will impact the environment, the cultural resources, the heritage, the economy, the Santa Fe Trail. I brought a friend from Denver, came down with me. And you can still stand at Thatcher, at Sierra Vista, at Tempest on the Santa Fe Trail. And you can see the Three Sisters. You can see the Spanish Peaks. You can feel what they saw when they walked that trail. You hear the wind through the grass. Think about all those explosives and all those helicopters and those lasers at night. What is that going to do for that?
Thank you.
Yeah. I didn't get it written up this time.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Paula. Well, we got, just so you know, we got about 10 minutes left, and we've got one more person.
Okay. Paula Odello from the Southern Colorado Environmental Council. This evening, my presentation is on behalf of our council, and we are going to be the voice for the voiceless, something that nobody is talking about. When our group started looking at this, I'm looking at the colonel because he needs to hear this message.
Are you, yeah, I'll move, sir.
When we started looking at the CIS, a lot of red flags came up. And what we've seen is what is now in jeopardy if all this comes in, as you want it to come in, our wildlife is losing their habitat completely. The ecosystem, which, because with your previous predecessors, they knew what we always worried about, keeping the balance, the stewardship of the land, okay? Because it was out of whack 4 or 5 years ago. And with the working group meetings, and that we have brought, well, I thought we were back in balance, okay? I read this EIS, And once again, and Dan's listening, which is good, because he understands. We got training here. We've got the environmental arm here. You're not balancing. You are ramming, and I'm using this word because I'm speaking on behalf of the voiceless. I'm speaking on behalf of that elk bull. I'm speaking on behalf of that burrowing owl, who is a threatened species, and who over the last 2 or 3 years, their population keeps decreasing on the maneuver site. And at that rate, in 4 to 5 years, the burrowing owl will not exist on the maneuver site. Okay? You're bringing all this in, and there's no testing. You're bringing cat from the air. You're bringing all this on the ground, blowing up. You got to think like the wildlife here also. Their senses are far greater than ours. They may be standing 5 miles down the road when you explode that, but their senses pick it up. They smell it, and there's immediate panic because they may not be going to that area till it's denning time to have, if they are the coyote or if they are the fox, when they have their babies, okay? But you're gonna remove those denning areas. So now someone, the normal migration is interrupted because now they gotta find a new den because that den has been removed. And my concern where the real fly came up is that report that we got yesterday in making, I'm not sure exactly which range it was, there was a prairie dog colony that was located in the middle of it. And because training that's going to be allowed by the EIS is not going to start till sometime in 2015, instead of transplanting that prairie dog colony to another area on this maneuver site, the decision was to use lethal management. And you went in, not you personally, but the workers went in and they dusted it. And what they did is they eradicated that prairie dog colony because it was going to be located in the middle of that training area. That is not stewardship. Stewardship is you use every single non-lethal method to deal with me, the elk, to deal with that burrowing owl or that prairie dog. I don't care if he is seen and joked about doing target practice on. He is a living being. And Mother Earth here provides his habitat or her habitat. And when you're going to introduce all this new training, then do it as a steward. Don't come in and create genocide on their habitat. The other thing is in there that we're reviewing is for these new drop zones, you are going to do deforestation, okay? Don't forget that there is a whole ecosystem that lives there. There is the tiniest worm. There is a caterpillar that lives on that tree that eventually becomes a butterfly who serves a purpose. There is a songbird that does a nest in that tree. There is an eagle that might stop on that tree, okay? It also provides shade for the elk in the summer when it is too hot. It also provides food, the nuts for the wildlife to eat it. It's, you really need to take time with all these big plans you have. You need to be slow about it and see what the actual impact of what you got to balance. Because right now when I read that, and when the other committees on their group read it, it's like, do we hold awake right now for the ecosystem at the maneuver site? Because if you're not going to do this and do it right, it's genocide. And you don't want to be responsible for a whole ecosystem dying. An ecosystem that has been here for 100 millions of years. And
I do not want to slow your roll, okay?
That's
so
it.
So we've got Is that?
Well,
we got one more. We got one more person, and I just want to make sure they get a fair shot.
Oh, they can have it. I think I delivered my message.
Okay.
And the ideal, real quick, I'll tell you is, because the timeline of going, I really think you need dialogue, not just we do presentations, and then you do a report. It needs to be done at that table where we can point out to you, this is what's jeopardy here. Yeah. This is what is in jeopardy. Right. And dialogue it, not just you give us a report written by some people from another state that maybe hasn't even realized there's a darn little burrowing owl that some people are going to think is a pain in the butt. But he has value. Every animal, every insect, is part of that ecosystem and maintains it so that you can sustain. Okay.
Thank you. All right, so, thank you. Appreciate it, Paula. There's, it sounded to me like there was another person who said they were signed up that I don't have in here.
Joseph Sanchez.
All right, so here's the, let's see in here, Joseph. Maybe I'm blind.
You may be out here still.
Oh, okay. So here's, let's just work through this. Lee Colburn. So, all right, Lee, here's the deal. You said if there's time.
Yes, there's time. How much time do I have?
How much time do you need?
2 minutes.
Okay.
You got three.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good?
Hi, all right. I'm Lee Colburn, C-O-L-B-U-R-N. I'm the defense and military advisor for Congressman Doug Lamborn, down to listen to this group. To listen to these proceedings. I thank you for all of the passion, intellectual, and very specific and also general comments that have been going on, and that's part of my job. Also, part of my job is to enter in the record, maybe not in congressional fashion, but enter in the record a letter from Congressman Lamborn about this process and about PCMS. I'll leave it for the record, and then we'll move on.
Yeah.
No, it'll take too long. I'll give you a copy, and I will yield my remaining minutes to a man who does want to talk about this. This will be available.
Hold on. I feel it. Okay, hold on. Pause. Here's the deal. Wait, listen to the moderator, please. Let's get through the public comment period, okay? Then Colonel's going to speak. And then, if you don't mind, for those that want to stay here, he can read it. Is that okay? Is that fair?
It will be in the record.
Okay.
Either way.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
I wonder why you are not limited on how long you can buy a bond, and we are. And it's
exactly. Okay. And what about this guy that wants to speak right here?
Well, he's going to speak.
Okay.
Yeah, he's good. You're right. And I'll take that one.
You guys stand up there and you waste all of our time. And then whenever it's over, it's over.
My name is Joseph Allen Sanchez. I'm a Los Animas County native. My genealogy can be traced back before Colorado was a state. Thankful to be a citizen of the United States where I can be an activist. And I'd like you all to consider the spiritual environment a little bit. And we were talking about voiceless people earlier. I like what Paula had to say, but consider other human beings. And I philosophically am opposed to train to engage war in the heavens, for instance, and do what we are continuing to do with the fifth largest economy, being the Pentagon. And I'm so proud of Los Animas County and the ranchers and farmers who have stood against this, not just because they're standing for their own land, because spiritually the environment is not positively affected when we are training to kill others. Let's just think about for a minute this flag that so many people make allegiance to. What kind of environmental impact statement do the people in Afghanistan or Iraq or the 72 other countries where we have military installations, what do they have to say at least we've got something we can have an impact. And we're considered the leaders of the world. How well are we doing leading the world when we consider what the talking heads say as gospel? What they say for CNN is what's going on. Well, you know what? Just sometimes one person can make a difference, and I'm really, I know you guys have other things to do tonight, and I know the military has a job to do, but I would like to ask each and every one of you military folks to, you know, it's a nation under God, so if you have your higher power or God or whoever you might pray to the next time you pray, to ask if what you're doing is really what you're supposed to be doing, please consider that the next time you get with your God. Because spiritually, our environment is not positively affected. And that's my addressing of how this thing affects the Purgatory Valley, this area that flows through the River of Lost Souls. Why are 18 military men, and the number keeps growing, military service people, we got a lot of women too now, killing themselves daily? Why is that happening? Why do we have to consider all of these things and put it all aside because, oh, well, they say on CNN that they're going to behead us if we don't do something different? It's not what's really going on. That's one of the reasons when 9/11 happened and I researched it for years and years, that I have an open challenge, and maybe I need to put it out there more. I will debate anyone that 9/11 was an inside job.
I doubt it.
Woo! And no one's come to me and taken me on yet, and so I'm putting it out there. Let's do it, friend. Let's set it up. Okay. Anyway, I know I've got my 2 minutes in. Thank you.
Great, now we're going to get killed by drones tonight.
Okay. Good times. All right. So that concludes the public comment period, the formal public comment period.
I have
period,
one question.
I have
one question. It's very short. Mr. Lieutenant, when your flares are going off and your heat-seeking missiles are going off, so these, like, heat-seeking missiles are going off at the flares, so something has to explode somewhere, right?
Let's talk about that one offline, and we have some actual subject matter experts on that particular topic.
Why does it have to be talked offline?
Well, because we're on
doesn't it explode somewhere over our family lands and over... And why are all this, instead of training people, why don't we agriculture all this stuff and feed all these starving people? And all these homeless people, why don't we build homeless shelters for all these starving homeless people that nobody has a place to go when it's freezing and snowing? Why doesn't the Army do something about that?
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your comment. All right, sir. Did you have one last?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, Dan.
You gotta take it. I just had one thing I wanted to bring up. In the scoping meetings up in La Junta, had a lot of discussion with a few with people at my sign that was explaining what kind of training we were doing. And I brought up what Paula was talking about, the Southern Colorado Working Group, and where we work through issues and have an open dialogue. And a lot of folks that I talked to in La Junta had no idea that that even existed. Some of them didn't have internet, cable, or even telephones, and this is the only forum I can reach out to some of those folks. So I wanted to talk about it. It's been going on for about 4 years now. It does give us a back and forth opportunity to work through issues, concerns, and perceptions. I would like to invite anyone who is interested in participating in our working group to sign up out here at the sign-in sheets. It says Southern Colorado Working Group. That is how I'm going to be able to contact folks. Right now, the next meeting is scheduled for Trinidad in January. We don't have a specific date or place yet, but I would love to have your participation. If you want more involvement, more information, back and forth dialogue, and the ability to even affect change here on the installation, please come to the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. And I'm glad that was a great plug for the Southern Colorado Working Group, Paula. That's where you and I have dialogued before.
and I know you represent a lot of the folks here in that forum, and it is certainly not an exclusive meeting. So we more than welcome those of you to come to that, and that's where that dialogue takes place. I'm present there. We'll have our environmental folks are there. Our trainers are there. And my command group is there. And that's where we can have that dialogue. And the last thing I'd like to do is we do have, there were a lot of comments made with respect to imbalance between training and environment. I do have my environmental folks here in the room, and we talked about for the public aspect of this that, because we wanted to give everybody a chance to talk, that questions are fine, but I'd like the environmental folks, if you could identify yourselves, raise your hand.
Yeah, I'm
stand up.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so people know who they are. Okay.
I'm Carlo Rivera de Aguilar. I'm the environmental chief for Carson.
Okay, well, the intent is just so that you know who he is and where he is, so that once we close this, if you've got questions about that training and balance that was mentioned, then we can talk about that. Also, public affairs. Where are my public affairs? Billy Gardner and Dee McNutt, please. Okay, if you want to find out about how to come to an open house here at the maneuver site, then talk to them. They will get you to an open house here at the maneuver site. Anyone that's in this room right now can come to an open house here at the maneuver site. We've had them with other rotations in the past, and we certainly will open those up to anyone else that would like to come to those in the future. Okay, so with that, I want to thank you for coming. And I'll stand around afterwards for questions. And through the Southern Colorado Working Group, I do want to explain. I know it would be great to be in maybe a bigger confine, like the gentleman said, over in Otero County. That'd be great. That is a way to do it. I was sensitive about not wanting to do this at Colorado Springs. Okay? And the reason why we did it here, quite frankly, it was because in that dialogue, we talked about folks wanting to get here to Pinyon Canyon. Now, this is not going out on the range itself, obviously, okay, but this was a way to get folks here to Pinyon Canyon. And so we're talking about how to get you here for an open house. And again, public affairs, raise your hand again, okay? You want to come out, we can take you, put you on bus, take you down range, you can get out, you can walk the terrain, and we are more than open to do that, okay? So that's why we had this here tonight. Just a second, sir. That's why we had this meeting here tonight. And I get it. It's an inconvenience for folks that live in La Junta. It's a little bit of an inconvenience for folks that live in Trinidad. I understand, okay? It was a way, and we're not gonna be able to accommodate everyone in Los Animas County. We can't have it everywhere. So
what about additional meetings?
Okay, well, I've talked about additional. We've got the Colorado Working Group meetings that where we talk about that. We've got the open house, and then we can always talk. Yeah, sir, we can talk. Yeah, we can talk EIS at those forums.
Well, you've already got your plug in, of course, in the public comment right about that. And so what the staff, the environmental staff, has to do here is they have to look at that, right? I mean, that's the whole purpose of these, is go back, look at that, work with the command staff, and figure out, is that something that we can do, right? And then, of course, through the methods that have been employed here, send the message out to folks that you're going to have another meeting. And that's their call, right? And so no decision has been made at this point in time, until we really listen today.
Yeah, we can definitely take a look. I'm open to having other dialogue meetings to discuss EIS. We've got to look at schedules and yes.
I think in particular what Rebecca Goodwin said about her time frame of what she receiving it just yesterday and the ending of these comments, it just doesn't make good common sense that we have time to review a 400-page EIS and make proper comments without an extension of time.
Right. I don't know why public affairs. This has been out for how long?
October 31st,
yeah.
Halloween.
And Halloween is when they're posted. That's what they're talking about.
I'm talking specifically about the historic preservation standpoint, the Section 106 that has to be done alongside of this.
Yeah.
It was said in the letter we would have it sent out by November 1st. And that did not happen. 10 days, 11 days later, and then the annual report comes out yesterday, it makes it very, very difficult to sit down with multiple very large reports and analyze it.
Then you got Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up.
Okay, so if I can, I mean, all these, just to be fair here, right, and respectful of everybody's time, all these comments have been made, and they've been written down, and we have them all. And so now the staff has to get together and actually look at those and do something with them. And I know that sounds like a cop-out, but that's the truth.
It is. Right? It doesn't be too late.
December 15th is a cutoff date.
No, it's not. It is not a cop-out. I want to say thank you for coming. Thank you very much. I will stand by. My staff will stand by. We will entertain whatever questions you have at that time. Thank
Who
you
makes that decision?
Well, hold on. All right. Hold on to that. So that ends, right? That concludes. Is this something new?
It is.
Okay, so let me do this, right? This terminates the formal session we just had, right? Okay, so now the public comment period. For those that want to go, are free to go. You know, if you feel like you're going to miss something.
I want to say one thing.
And then we've got Mr. Colburn, is that right?
Since this meeting started, Ron, there's been an armed person scanning this crowd at both doors.
Yeah, what's up with
that? I'm
going to
tell you something. I just want to say one thing. I spent a 4th of July in Beijing, and I've spent a 4th of July in Moscow. And that's the saddest damn thing to me about this evening.
I agree. It's creepy. Yeah.
The important thing to realize is that them boys with big iron on their hip is there to protect us from them, not them from us.
Thank you, Sam.
We good? We got the chuckle? All right. Mr. Colburn. You guys asked. Hey, you asked for Mr. Colburn for him to read that, so please give him the time if you want to hear from that. Okay? This is extra time. It's bonus time now. Yes, ma'am. Comment forms, too, before you get started. There's still comment forms for everybody if they want to write their comments in, get them in here instead of send them. Do you want to use the mic, sir?
No, not
because there's a lot of noise.
I don't know if they care.
All right. So, Mr. Colburn's getting ready to speak, so if you give him your attention, please, for those that are still here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those
that are interested.
We're off the clock, so I'm just going to read this. It's going to be in the record. I'm not giving a speech. I'm just giving my...
He's trying to read his letter.
My voting member...
Hey, please! He's trying to read the letter that you asked him to read.
This is to the NEPA program manager, to whom it may concern. Since 1985, America's soldiers have been utilizing Pinyon Canyon Maneuver Site for one of the nation's most valuable Army training areas. The area has become immensely more important in the years following 2001 as combat forces have been able to sharpen their military skills and become more lethal for theater operations. I firmly believe the residents of Colorado understand the sacrifices of our military members have made to defend our nation and have supported PCMS along with the environmentally responsible management activities taken over the years. Our state's commitment to our defense has been demonstrated by the cooperation of federal, state, and county agencies under the leadership of the Southern Colorado Working Group. Currently, the U.S. government successfully trains under strict environmental guidance and supervision. As a member of Congress, it's my responsibility to ensure that our soldiers remain the top fighting force in the world and Pinyon Canyon continues to serve this vital function. It is imperative that this critical national defense asset remain part of our national arsenal as a crucial training environment. As an open dialogue between the Army, Southern Colorado residents, political leaders, and the Department of Defense is the only way to ensure this national crucial training asset remains vibrant for our country and the people of Colorado. I am aware of the extraordinary environmental measures taken by the Army to both preserve Colorado natural resources and to ensure minimum damage to the ecology from Army maneuvers in the area. Economically, the Army has continued to use logistical sources of supplies to ensure the joint partnership with the community continues to be beneficial for all parties. All levels of the Fort Carson command structure work closely through community agreements and local working groups to minimize the environmental, transportation, and social impacts.
PCS remains our best Colorado and national asset for training our Army soldiers so they are ready to engage in combat in any desert and higher altitude semi-arid environment as America remains engaged in Afghanistan and across the Middle East. It remains a critical resource for our soldiers as they train for military missions throughout the world. As I stated for the record in May of 2009, it is important to remember what is ultimately at stake, the safety of our troops in combat. We owe them the very best training we can give them so they can win wars and return home safely, end quote. I continue to support the use of the current PCMS National Training Range and its environmentally responsible management going forward. I pledge to ensure Congress supplies resources and oversight to guarantee PCMS viability and resiliency through the coming decade. And signed, Doug Lamborn, a member of Congress. And if you have I do have some cards if you want to email me or provide feedback off the record outside of the NEPA formal comment process.